Hello everyone, this is Flash W, speaking to you live from Petaluma, California, where I have the honor of interviewing a wonderful young lady I used to work with. It's weird to say that because the whole past tense thing is kind of weird. Through COVID and fires and all sorts of things, we worked at the same agency for an extended amount of time, going through many ups and downs. So, yeah, what is it, about
5 years?
Five, 6 years,
yeah.
Oh my gosh. We've been through a lot, even though we're in the same agency, we're doing different things. Mm-hmm. We worked on campus together for a little bit, you know, referring students back and forth. I want to learn more about what you're doing right now, but I can safely say that you have really paved the way for yourself as a therapist. I'd like to introduce you to all my people out there that are listening. So, Whitney, please tell us a little bit about yourself and what you have to bring to the podcast.
Yeah, my name's Whitney Sheave. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. I've been licensed for a year and a half as a therapist. And as Flash was mentioning, we worked together at an agency in Sonoma County. And yeah, I think Flash, you were that site that I worked at was my first counseling site I worked at.
I remember being thrown
there and being like, what do I do? And you're like, here's some kids. And I'm like, okay, how do I pull them out of class? Oh, here's how you do it. Like, that's how the work goes. They throw you to the wolves and you just find a nice person. And you're like, can you help me?
And I was lucky enough to be the person to orient you and to help you out whenever you needed. And, that's just the way that I work. It was wonderful to be able to help you out.
Yeah, yeah. So now I no longer work with kids. That was my start to therapy. I don't enjoy working with young people. I did my time. I do work with people like 16 and up. But I say like, I like a mature, like 16 and up, little adults. But yeah, so I'm a therapist here. And one of my things I do really love working with is I love working with couples, and that's something we're going to talk about today. Yeah, and I have lots of ideas of just things I want to do in the future to keep expanding my business as a therapist with couples. So there's always ideas percolating for me.
What is your specialty? Yes, you have your master's degree in marriage and family.
Master's in counseling.
Yeah. Okay. So from master's in counseling, how did the path come into shape for you?
Yeah.
From your master's in counseling up to this point.
Yeah. When I went in to get my degree, I was like, I'm going to work only with women. I'm going to work within a feminist model. And I like had all these ideas of like what I was going to do and really like uplifting women, which I do. It's not like I don't. That's like something went happened in school and I said, I'm not going to do that anymore. No, I do that. But I think that's the process of becoming a therapist. When you're gaining those 3,000 hours, you start learning from these new clients that you're working with. But then you also are learning from your supervisors. You know, I had a whole host, potentially, I think, 10 different supervisors over the course of 3,000 hours. And then they kind of put little flavors and different ideas of like, oh, I could do this, I could do that.
Right.
But I really would say it wasn't until I became licensed and in my own practice where I started to go, I have a niche here. When you're working in community mental health, you're just taking clients off the wait list and you're taking anybody and everybody. You're trying to get people seen and feeling better and then off to the next. But when you're in private practice, you start to niche down. It's this term that they call it. And so I developed a group of highly anxious clients. And that's what I love working with. I'm working a lot with social anxiety, generalized anxiety, OCD like issues. But in this, I found I really liked working with couples. And in school, I remember we had like one day where we learned about PACT therapy, the psychobiological approach to couples counseling. And that always stuck with me. And I was always like, ooh, there's something there. I want to do something with that when I have the money.
It's expensive
to get trained. And it wasn't until I think I was I was traveling to go see my sister. I was flying to Seattle to see my sister. I was traveling to go see her because I was going to get married that summer. Uh-huh. And so I was going down to see her so we could pick out like her bridesmaid outfit that she was going to wear. And I was listening to the podcast Getting Curious by Jonathan Van Ness. Mm. And he had Stan Tacton on the podcast. And at that time, Stan was kind of telling people, read this book called We Do. Right. And so that's where I got hooked. You know, I'm like, I'm listening to Stan talk about this book and how it's so great, and how couples should read it before they get married. After they get married, they should just read it. And so I ordered it, and I told my fiance at the time, hey, we're going to read this book together before we get married. Mm. And in reading that, that changed our relationship so much for the best. I got the book and I was like, oh no, like this is going to be the thing that makes us like split apart. Oh. I was so afraid, but we read it. And it helped us in so many ways. It gave us the words and languaging. And I was like, I'm going to do that. Once I get licensed, I'm going to become a PACT therapist. And so I guess this year I finally got trained in level one of PACT therapy. Oh, there's three levels. There's three levels. I'm probably maybe only going to go up to two, maybe three, but definitely, up to two. And so, yeah, so that's what I do. I work with couples and I work with people who are highly anxious. Wow. I also have a very also niche that I think is funny. This is a podcast, so you're not seeing any of this, but I'm someone who is not tattooed at all.
Okay.
I have no tattoos on my body, but I attract heavily tattooed people.
What?
A lot of my clients are these amazing men and women who are like tattooed head to toe, these beautiful art and like fully modified. I love, and I'm just like, how do I, like me, a lot of my clients are like, they're the outcasts of the world. Mm-hmm. And that's always been me. Is kind of the weird, quirky person, the one who's been too loud, too much, all the things. And so I think that's also the cool thing about therapy is you just attract the people that who are your people,
The stigma.
The stigma.
People are so stigmatized.
Yeah.
They're put into these little boxes, and that's how we are as professionals. People have their specialties.
Yeah.
And your specialty, PACT. Is that correct?
Yes.
I had a opportunity to experience some of your work at our training over a month and a half ago, and you got me stirring. What is the core of it? What does PACT address within a relationship?
Yeah. So PACT, we're looking at attachment theory, we're looking at arousal, and we're looking at neurobiology. So it's fun because it lights up that like nerdy science part of me of like, okay, what's the brain doing here? What's happening here? Mm-hmm. But it's also attachment theory. As I said, I thought I was going to go in this one direction when I first went to school, but I learned about attachment theory through one of my supervisors and then just fell in love with it. It answered so many questions in my life. And I'm just like, now I just like look at people. I'm like, oh, that's what's happening for you. Oh, that's what's happening for me.
You can look and just tell.
I know. Okay. And I think also for me, why I like attachment theory so much is it makes meaning out of what we do. Mm-hmm. We're not X way because of maliciousness, because of we want to harm people. We're this way because of potentially events that happened when we were 0 to 18 months.
Yeah.
That's wild to think about, that like a person can be developed within that time of how their caregivers responded to them. Mm-hmm. And then as you grow older, those kind of stories, those narratives become reaffirmed. Mm-hmm. And so that's what, attachment just got me hooked. And I was like, great. Like we got science, we got this theory, and we got like some tongue in cheek in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
It is. I like that PACT is a little bit, mischievous.
Mm. Say more about that.
Yeah.
Mischievous.
It's, we ask questions. There's this way in which we ask secure attachment questions. Mm-hmm. So a couple comes in and I have my kind of list of things I'm going to assume they do, but often knowing they don't.
Hmm.
So that's a little mischievous. That's me having the couple sit there and I go, so you two tell each other everything, right? And then the couple kind of looks at each other, look at me, look at each other. And one of them is going to come forward. Not that there's any right answers, but the answer I'm looking for is, of course.
Mm.
When I get the typical answer I get of, well, what do you mean everything? that is a little red flag for me to go, we have some insecure attachment here. Mm-hmm. Because a securely attached couple will understand the spirit of the law. Mm. Insecure attachment is going by the letter of the law. Mm. You know, and the thing is, do we, most securely attached people, yes, they tell their partners everything. Mm-hmm. Now, are they telling them truly everything? Well, I ate this today, that kind of upset my stomach, and then I did this. You know, no, not exactly.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. Is it okay to not tell your partner everything? I mean, do our partners have to know everything if they're engaged in a relationship?
I think so, because, you know, I think about, like, when this question comes up of, do you tell them everything? And I get the answer of, what do you mean by everything? Because that's kind of going, well, should I have told them about that thing? You know, right. And I kind of think about the times where I see couples come in and maybe a random ex has recently texted somebody, you know, and nothing happened. That person ignored it, said, hey, this is not appropriate. Don't talk to me. But that would be a thing where you want to tell that to your partner. You say, hey, just want to let you know, da da da, text me today. I just ignored it. Hmm. So it's not a big deal, but
it can at least address it.
At least address it, because it can become a big deal. Because what happens if your partner's hanging out and you get up to go to the bathroom, your phone lights up, and that ex texts them and you go, what's that all about? Uh-huh. Because now insecure attachment's going to come up. I know if that's me and I saw that, I'd be like, excuse me. What is happening here? Right. Because my anxiety, my insecure attachment is going to the races. It's like, oh, you two are talking to each other. You two are seeing each other. Where that's just not true, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's where having understanding of all of that can really, really help.
In the communication part.
Yeah.
Let's delve into what communication is. First of all, mm-hmm. how do you define communication as a therapist? And when you're working with your clients, mm-hmm. can you give us an example of how they can improve communication mm-hmm. between them?
Yes. So to me, communication is clear and direct.
Okay.
Asking for your needs and wants appropriately.
Okay.
And I think I blow a lot of clients' minds of just tell them directly. And they're like, how? I'm like, just how you said it to me. Mm-hmm. You know, be nice. Let's not be, you know, mean to people.
Right.
But, you know, be direct. Hey, you need to pick up your shoes when you come home. Mm-hmm. That doesn't feel good when you leave all your stuff around.
Right.
You know, we need to be honest with that. Hey, can you call me? I just need to hear you say, I love you. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. and there's so much in our culture about, like, oh, well, you know, they should know. You know, I'm like, okay, I'm not a mind reader.
That's a pain in my rear when I hear it.
Oh, well, they should know. But what if they don't know?
Right.
I also get the one where I tell people, but sometimes you do need to, like, reach out to your partner. They don't know, and they don't know you're having a bad day, and you just need to hear, hey, babe, I love you. You got this. You know, I'll see you tonight. Yeah. And so sometimes we need to say, can you call me and tell me, hey, babe, I love you. You know, you got this, see me tonight. And they're like, well, it feels inauthentic. Well, but that's what you need right now.
Yeah. That makes sense.
I was like, so you're getting in your head too much about it. And so I believe that's my goal as a therapist, actually. If I can think across the board, one thing I can teach people is clear and direct communication. Mm-hmm. I think it's actually this joke I have with my husband. I remember once, gosh, it must have been during the pandemic or maybe the year before that. I want a cake, a card, and flowers for my birthday. That's all I want. And he's just like, okay. And that was kind of sitting there starting to be like, oh, Whitney, you're too much. You're too much. This is, you know, you're too needy. You're too, you're a brat. Da, da. And I like look at him and I go, was that too much? Like I'm being very like, this is what I want. He's like, it's great. He's like, I know exactly what you want. I know how to make you happy. You're saying, hey, I want this. I can do that.
Without the assumptions of, okay, I said it once and that, you know, I expected it to happen.
Well, you know I like flowers. You know I like it when you write me a card. Like, you should have known. But it's like, no, this is what I want. And it's the same year every year. I go, I want a cake, I want flowers, I want a card. And it's like the same thing I do. But I say it every year. And then typically now it's more of like, I want you to get me flowers. I want you to get me a card. I'll go get my own cake. Because I like to pick out my own cake. Because then I get exactly what I want.
Because if he doesn't pick out the cake...
Well, he's going to do a great job, but I want to see all the options.
See, there we go.
I want to go, well, am I feeling a tiramisu or do I want a lemon? I don't know. I don't know. It's that gut decision you got to make right there.
Choices. That's you know, what I'm talking about.
And the thing is, like, and I'm allowed to be a fickle person. I'm allowed to be like, I want a chocolate, but then get there and be like, I got a lemon cheesecake.
and you know what? When you said that, I'm thinking, being the male that I am, as you're talking about that, you're talking about being fickle. As the male who might be engaging with you, I'd be just, oh my God, you're driving me nuts. I'll be into my head. What is my role, my responsibility when you are in that space where you're fickle, where you see things a certain way, you want things a different way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes, yes. So that's when that I think that dynamic is when potentially one partner isn't being exactly direct with that. Well, you know, it's I don't know if you've ever experienced this one. Where do you want to go to dinner tonight? Oh, I don't care. Let's get Mexican food. No, I don't want Mexican food. It's that little scenario. So,
oh, I know this scenario so
well. Oh, yes. We've all grown up with this scenario.
Oh, my gosh.
And so, that fickleness, so if that's me being like, whatever you want, I'll go. And then he offers, let's get Mexican. I'm like, no. It's like, hey, we're not. Then that's for him to be like, hey, you said you didn't care, and I offered an option. I would like to get Mexican food. But if you don't, then I would like for you to offer me an option of what might sound good to you. You know?
Uh-huh.
Or if this is always a thing and I'm going, hey, what do you want to get for dinner tonight? Oh, I don't care. Okay, no, typically when you say you don't care, you do. So what have you had today to eat? You know, what have you had in the last week?
Kind of work through it. Don't just take it for face value.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so it is slowing down. And that's, as I said, that what should we eat? Oh, goodness. That's a hard one. I grew up in a household with a parent who often was like, oh, I don't care. But then had like opinions about everything. And it's like,
ah. Yeah.
So I try not to be that person. But there's times where you're like, but I do want something else, actually. Like, okay, sorry, I wasn't being honest. Actually, I really wanted Italian. And when we're direct, we go, I really want Italian. And someone's like, I just ate Italian. But I can get pizza. You're like, okay, let's get pizza.
So there's that negotiation based off of the information that's out there.
Yeah.
Working to some kind of agreement that both people can,
Well, and so I like to think of actually about bartering. Mm-hmm. So let's say I want Italian, but he wants Mexican food. Mm-hmm. So we want to get a win-win situation here. A compromise is one of us is going to lose. Fine, we'll get Mexican food. Mm-hmm. But a win-win would be, well, let's do this. You order at your restaurant. I order at my restaurant. We'll bring it home and we'll watch a movie together.
Okay.
You know, and they might be like, but it's so much better when we eat in there. Okay, you don't want to do the whole takeout. Okay, get that. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll get Italian food with you tonight, but we're going to come home and watch a movie I want to watch, and you're going to rub my back.
There we go.
So it's this idea of we're kind of going, I'll give you this if you give me that.
Right.
And we're both winning. Mm-hmm. I always like to think of, like, how do you, barter when you're at the market, and you go, I want that orange for $2, and you're selling it for $5. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to barter.
I think a quid pro quo. Oh, my God. Yeah. But a healthy version.
Yes, a healthy version. Quo. Yeah. So that is communication. That's the basics of it is just being direct. And as I have at least one person who has told me so far, they appreciate it so much when others are direct with them. Mm-hmm. And especially when you go, hey, I didn't like that thing that you did. That didn't make me feel good. Mm-hmm. And they'd be like, oh, I did mess up, didn't I? Yeah, you kind of did, And talking about those times when we mess up and being like, I don't know how I feel right now. I need 5 minutes. Okay, cool. I need you to actually step away. I need a big one, the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Both my partner and I worked excessively throughout the pandemic. We did not not get a chance to work. Right. He left. He actually worked outside the home the whole time. He went to work every day. And I was in my office doing telehealth every day. And so he would get home. And so to also give a little bit of terminology, I am an anxiously attached person and he's an avoidantly attached person. So he would come home. Yeah, and I can talk more about that if we want. But when he'd get home, I've been cooped up in the house all day. Probably hadn't left the house for a week because I would go grocery shopping once a week. That was my special treat. Mm-hmm. And so he'd get home and he'd be like, oh my gosh, you're home. Is the, you know, the golden retriever, you know, when you come home. And he had a long day dealing with some really intense stuff in his job. And we had to talk about like, hey, I need like five. I need to like take my jacket off, put my stuff down, I will come to you and give you a hug and give you a kiss, but I just need a minute. I'm like, okay, I can do that.
Right.
Like, it was hard, but I was like, but I want to give that to him. I don't want to bombard him and hijack his nervous system. First thing he does when he comes to the door. And then he's like, don't. You know, so I can give him that. I can wait another 5 more minutes. I waited all day.
Yeah, right? But so, sometimes we feel like we can't.
Sometimes you can't.
It's just right there.
It's right there.
Right?
Yeah. But that's where I learned, let me finish up some notes. Let me do some things I want to do while he's kind of getting himself transitioned to home time, and then I'll be done with work, he'll be ready to be home, then we can be together.
Right, right. And I can't help but to think about barriers that get in the way of sharing our what we want and what we need from our partner. From your profession, what are some common barriers that tend to come up that people just have a hard time getting through?
So a lot of times, I would say always, but for mostly of those anxious, preoccupied people out there, attachment style people, we're going to feel, my barrier's going to be, I'm too much. I don't deserve to be. I'm unlovable. I shouldn't say that. I make them, you know, it's a lot of that kind of self-deprecation, like, this, I'm bad for wanting that. And so I'm not going to ask it. I secretly want it.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to, through kind of small little ways, kind of herd you towards the answer. You know.